If you think you can't go from politics to the divide, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, I'm Carol Gold. The number here is 914-803-4522. You're at Above the Fray, and I'm here with my co-host, Steve Clark. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Carol.
A couple of good stories in the news this week, all of which I know we have opinions on. Hillary Clinton and her email debacle and the reactions to Netanyahu's speech, and for me, most importantly, a story out of Russia. But I want to start with Hillary Clinton. You know, many years ago, I worked on a political campaign for Mayor Bill Green of Philadelphia. When he was running for mayor, I was on the finance committee of his campaign. And after he was elected, I was appointed to the revenue department, and I handled bankruptcies for the city of Philadelphia. But I also remained politically active with him, and Senator Ted Kennedy at the time was coming to Philadelphia to give a speech, and everyone was thinking that part of that speech was going to be that he was going to announce for the presidency, that he was going to run for the presidency. And because I was politically involved with the mayor, and the mayor was Democrat to Democrat was kind of arranging this feat that was going to take place at the Sheraton Hotel in Philadelphia, I was part of the mayor's staff who wound up working with the advance team, with Senator Kennedy's advance team. Politicians have advance teams that set up their appearances long before they ever arrive in a city, and they make sure everything's right from the temperature of the room to, you know, the invitations that went out, whatever. Kennedy showed up hours late, and when he did, he was drunk out of his mind, as he was often the case. And it was the first time that I personally ever experienced someone who repeatedly would shoot themselves in the foot when they got to a certain level of power or accomplishment. So Kennedy repeatedly, he was, if you're a Democrat or you're social action oriented, he was a phenomenal senator in that regard. But he was also someone who, every time he tried to move beyond the level of senator, every time he flirted with the presidency, he undid himself through his own hand. And I noticed it then with Jerry Brown in California. He did the same thing when he ran for president. He was really on a roll, and then he announced that if he got nominated and he got the nomination, he was going to pick Jesse Jackson as his VP. And that was the end of Jerry Brown. And I've seen it in other people. It's as if certain people only have a threshold for power. And once they break through that threshold, they can't function. So that they shine really bright at a certain level, and then they become completely disconnected once they try to go beyond that level of what appears to be expertise. Which is why I guess many people run for the presidency, but not many make it all the way to becoming the candidate of their party. I think there's something similar going on with Hillary Clinton, actually. And I don't know whether, you know, I don't know whether it's the same or different than those cases that I just addressed. I mean, what was his name that ran with the when Gore ran? What was North Carolina?
John Edwards.
Yeah, John Edwards did the same thing. Thank you. John Edwards did the same thing. Right, Steve. And so Hillary Clinton, I mean, when she went out on that book tour that she went out on not too long ago, they finally pulled her from that book tour because every day that she spoke, she said something else stupid or damaging. And this email thing is just the latest in a series of shoot yourself in the foot kinds of behavior that I wonder if she's just someone who can only be in the wings, so to speak. I mean, I heard today, and I never thought about this, Steve. This isn't my thought. This is someone who wrote into the Rush Limbaugh show and said, you know, she's never really done anything before she was Secretary of State. She was the president's wife. She screwed up the first attempt at universal health care. She had no experience, really, to be Secretary of State. Where did that come from? So the person posited that maybe she had set up a private email account initially to really have communication with her husband that no one would know about, or maybe others who could advise her, and there would never be a trail. Advise her how to be Secretary of State, because she really had no international experience other than flying around with her husband. And so I wonder if she's really near the end of this giant bubble, so to speak, and of ascending to the presidency, whether she can't go through that next level. And so what does that actually look like in terms of, okay, well, who then do the Democrats have? Steve, you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I do. I think there's an interesting point, and oddly enough, it came from the Rush Limbaugh show yesterday, that he made this comment, and I'm going to include you and I in this, is that there's two worldviews that exist right now. There's a worldview based on demographics. And the demographics, you would say, just call it like, you know, 20 to 45. And there's a demographics of, say, 45 to 65 or 45 to 70, kind of two big demographics. Everybody over 45 knows Hillary and knows who she is. And if you want to call it, people in the political power, people have been around for a long time, know that game, know who Hillary is. And her bigger supporters are from that era of going back in the 80s and 90s and what she had, you know, what supposedly she had done and what she represented. So which is her power base, is really, which is kind of the old media establishment. But then you have a whole other generation of the people in the between 25 and 45 that have no idea really who Hillary was. They weren't around when she was president. They were too young.
She wasn't really president. You mean when he was president?
When he was president, exactly. Excuse me. That they didn't really know who she was. But the new generation, the generation between 24 and 45 see her and don't like her. They see somebody who, you know, was a Secretary of State for under Obama, did not do very well. They know the tech field much better than any of us do, and they know what she's done. And this, they know exactly what it means to have an encrypted email. They know exactly what she was trying to do. And the point that I thought was interesting, and it resonates really badly in a time when the government is snooping on everybody and is trying to control everybody's access to email, to Facebook, and kind of snooping on all the phone calls. Here we have one of the most powerful people in the world trying to opt out of this whole complex and getting her emails on the own. So it's very distasteful, especially to the tech community, which is a large part of the younger generation. And the second thing that I found was very interesting is that, I mean, people forget this, but kind of a, you know, a little bit of a longer trajectory was that, you know, Richard Nixon got into a lot of trouble for when he was president for basically snooping in on files or his alleged crime that people worked for him. But Hillary Clinton, people forget, stole and had access to FBI files that she took out of the FBI department when Bill Clinton was president. I think it was in the neighborhood of between 40 and 50 files of political enemies, and she grabbed their files. Now, why is that so important? Well, General Petraeus, the general who commanded in Afghanistan and Iraq, was found guilty for holding one piece of classified information. Was found guilty of holding one piece of classified information. So here we have, you know, again, kind of our theme that you and I talk about, Carol, is this theme of depending on who you are, justice is completely different for if you have the right political connection. So, you know, to make a long story short, I think the generation below us is not going to allow her to go through with the election.
Well, who do you think they have, the Democrats, if she's not a player?
I don't know, Carol. I think people always kind of come up. I think that what I've heard the or rumored to be is that Elizabeth Warren is the next candidate. I think there's a movement afoot that Hillary's seen as more pragmatic, and Elizabeth Warren is seen as the next, you know, light bearer of the more leftist movement of that type of people, of those, that type of, not people, politics and that agenda. I think Elizabeth Warren fits more into their agenda than what Hillary Clinton does.
Well, I've actually heard talk of Al Gore, believe it or not.
Really? I have not heard that.
That he is, number one, he's financially situated so that he can run most of his campaign from his own money, like Trump. He has the most experience, both domestic and foreign policy-wise. He is in that tech world himself.
Yeah, you're right.
And that he that he knows how to be a candidate. And so they're saying, what I'm hearing is that they may, you know, come to him and say, Al, you got to do it. It's, you know, you got to do it. And he's not about to say, you know, hey, I don't think I'm interested. I mean, he's got a huge ego. He really comes with very little baggage. His baggage is probably his divorce and some allegations of his own sexual proclivities with messieurs and masseuses. What was the other? Oh, and that he sold, I mean, a failed network to Al Jazeera, a company that's owned by an oil-producing company, a country. What a hypocrite,
yeah,
in light of his own environmental flag that he waves. And that by now we know that a lot of what was in The Inconvenient Truth was in fact factually incorrect. So he's got vulnerabilities, but he's also in a field of really very few stars. He's going to shine pretty brightly, if she bows out or if she's forced out. I mean, she is not a candidate. It was given to her in 08. It was hers for the taking. She blew it in 08. Barack Obama outshined her. So I think there's a really good chance that she can't go the distance. Now, you mentioned Elizabeth Warren. The thing that people really need to pay attention to with Elizabeth Warren is, and I actually think there's a danger there, and it's this. Elizabeth Warren correctly identifies what's wrong, and she identifies it very much like a Republican. The issues that she identifies are issues that Republicans normally tout. However, her solutions to those problems are incredibly leftist and incredibly bad. And so because we as Americans historically, you know, we do headlines and we do 15 minutes of focus in our brains on, and we research nobody before we go into the voting booth, so to speak. The danger with her is that on the surface, if you don't understand not what her policies are, but what her solutions are, if you only listen to what she says is wrong, she's going to sound pretty good. And she's going to sound good to both Republicans and Democrats. And she's going to be in many ways like a Barack Obama, which is why she's his pick, they say. They say the Clintons and the Obamas, there's no love lost, and he wants Elizabeth Warren to be his successor. So there's a lot that's yet to unfold, I think, Steve. I mean, clearly we've got time. I know this ex-governor, former governor, who I know nothing about from Maryland, they're talking about in place of Hillary. I don't know why, because I know nothing about him and never heard anything about him. I think is his name O'Malley? I don't even know what his name is.
Yeah, I saw that. I had no idea who he was, just like you.
Me either. So it'll be very interesting, because it may turn out that the Democratic primary actually has an air of interest that it wouldn't otherwise have, or that people didn't expect to have. Now, having said all that, Steve, I don't know about you, but I never count the Clintons out. These people are maniacal, they are devious, they are power hungry. And I don't count her out till I hear it from her own lips, quite honestly. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Go ahead.
Briefly, I just want to not spend too much time because I really would rather spend a little bit more time on Russia and Putin, but I just would like to talk about the reaction to Netanyahu's speech. I don't know if you saw it today. There's apparently some real concern here in the U.S. government, in our State Department, as to the new and seemingly disturbing alliance between, I think he's a general in the Iranian Red Guard, who is actually currently in Iraq helping the Iraqis fight ISIS. So you've got Shia Iran in Sunni Iraq helping them fight ISIS. Now, on the face of it, well, we would say, well, that's a good thing. They're helping fight ISIS. But when you think about that, that just shows the incredible expanse of power that Iran has now garnered for itself, that the Iraqis, who hate the Iranians, would actually be in a position to both need and allow a really bad guy, a guy with a really bad history around terrorism, this general from the Red Guard, to be directing operations in Iraq having to do with ISIS. Because what's really going on within Islam, whether you look at Iran or you look at ISIS, you're looking at a fight for control of Islam, for control of the world's Muslims, and for control of the Middle East. And we've left Iraq so damaged, and we've left Iraq so unable to care for itself, getting out, thank you, President Obama, prematurely without leaving a force there either to train sufficiently or to fight sufficiently, that now they've turned to Iran, which only expands Iran's power. And so the reason that I talk about all this, Steve, in light of Netanyahu's speech is because, you know, today is Purim, it's called. It's a Jewish holiday, and it's a biblical holiday, and it's the holiday that comes from the book of Esther. So if you know your story of Esther, the Persian king, Ahasuerus, was going to, well, he was being manipulated by his viceroy, Haman, and Haman convinced him that the Jews were really bad and that he needed to slay all the Jews. And so Ahasuerus, the king, who had a Persian wife that he killed because she wouldn't dance naked in public for him, sent out word that he wanted to marry the most beautiful woman in his kingdom, and they brought all these pretty young women to him, and the one he picked turned out to be a Jew. He didn't know that. Her name was Esther, and he made her queen. And so when Haman convinced Ahasuerus to kill all the Jews, literally all of them, and the army was being amassed to do the work on a specific date, they actually pulled lots, which are called Pur, P-U-R, in Hebrew, which is where the holiday of Purim comes from. Purim is plural for Pur. The Pur, they pulled lots for what day they were going to kill all the Jews, send the army out to slaughter them. Esther's uncle, Mordecai, who was a bit of a prophet, came to her and said, you've got to go into the king and tell him that, and bear with me on the history lesson because it all connects, you got to go into the king and tell him that you're a Jew and Haman is manipulating him, and what Haman says isn't true. The Jews aren't plotting against the king, and you've got to stop this. And Esther said, if I go in and tell him I'm a Jew, he's going to kill me too. And Mordecai said to her, if you think you can save your neck while your people are slaughtered, you're mistaken. Eventually, you'll be slaughtered too. And so she fasted and prayed for 3 days, went into the king, got his ear. Long story short, convinced him not to go ahead and that Haman was the bad guy. And Haman wound up being hung on the same gallows that he had built to hang Mordecai. And so the holiday of Purim today in Israel and around the world is to commemorate the survival of the Jews from the Persians. Now, Iran is Persia. Iran's name was Persia up until the Second World War when it changed it to Iran, which means Aryan, out of respect for Adolf Hitler. So the modern day Persians are the ancient Persians are the Iranians. And so this holiday is particularly important to Jews around the world. But the connection I see is this, Steve, if you can follow the dots of the story I just told, I personally think that Netanyahu came here to the United States bearing the message of Mordechai. I believe that we are Esther. The United States is Esther. And he came to warn us that if we think we can stay away and out of the Middle East and away from what Iran is trying to do, which is the annihilation of Israel, that we will perish too in the end. And who is the king? Who is Ahasuerus? I happen to believe it's Vladimir Putin. And I happen to believe that Haman, who is manipulating Putin, is a guy named Alexander Dugin, who is the head of the sociology department at the University of Moscow, but who is also the head of the security forces for Putin. He is an insane fascist. He is Hitler resurrected. And he is the architect of Putin's move into the Ukraine, into the Crimea, and now into the Ukraine. And so I think in a very real sense, we are reliving a prototypical situation that is biblical in origin, but that we're playing out today. And the importance that I think of Netanyahu's message is that we not turn a blind eye and a deaf ear, as some of the Democrats tried to do and some of the pundits tried to do. Iran won't stop with Israel. Iran is being financed and pushed by Putin because the fascists and the socialists and the anarchists and the Muslims all have the same goal, the annihilation of Israel, followed by the annihilation of the West. And we need to be able to connect those dots so that we understand what that speech before the joint session of Congress really was. I believe it was the ringing of the bell, the last bell.
Yeah. You know, what was amazing about it was how the Congress responded. It was, more than anything else, it was, and the American people have responded, I think, that it was finally somebody speaking the truth and trying to bring the parties, both sides of the aisle, together. I mean, just contrast that, you know, a few weeks ago, or I should say maybe it's a little bit longer, a few months ago when Obama had the State of the Union, and he, you know, he referred that he was going to work together with both houses. And he says it was even more important since he wouldn't be running for election again. And the Republicans cheered, and he snapped back with kind of a smirk and a smart answer, basically just showing that that again, it's still about politics and it's still about him and being divisive. I don't think there's been a speech in the last, you know, since his first election that's been inclusive, that's been something that's been uniting. And I think more importantly, Netanyahu speaks the truth, and the truth, no matter what you want to say, resonates with people and gets out, and people understand what the truth is. And leadership, by naming things of what they are and calling them as they are, just resonates. It's hard to hide from the truth. And I think that was a key part of his speech. But secondly, I think was also quite fascinating was a response from some of the lackeys that were, you know, had to say in the rebuttal towards Netanyahu's speech. I think the most telling point was when Obama came and they asked him, the press asked him if he had heard the speech, and he proceeded to say he hadn't. He was on a call with Ukraine. I mean, what a ridiculous statement! The whole world was watching that speech. The whole world was watching that speech. And for the leader of the free world, knowing what a big event it was, you know he was watching it also. And for something as basic as that, he had to lie once yet again. So it kind of was a great contrast. Here was a guy, Netanyahu, speaking to truth. And here was Obama when asked the most basic and simplest of questions. Did he listen to the speech? He said no, when everybody knew he was lying. That's really what I took away from it.
Well, a couple of things. One of the other objections or one of the other after-speech attacks against Netanyahu was that, from Nancy Pelosi and some other Democrats, is how dare he come here and stand before a joint session of Congress and teach us about what our foreign policy should be. And yet, just months ago, Obama invited what is it, Jose Calderon? Is Jose his first name? The president of Mexico? And he came before a joint session of Congress, and he chewed us out over our border policy, over our immigration policy. And he stood in the chamber of the House, and he absolutely chewed us out. Netanyahu never did that. He came with grace. He came with class. He praised a president who ignored his presence here. And he praised, he tipped his hat to Harry Reid and John Kerry. And so it just showed me the partisanship is so, it's like a cancer. It's a disease, the partisanship, that they will sacrifice every truth in order to maintain the fiction of the story that they write about their adversaries. And I really believe that the president, our president, Barack Obama, has fanned this hatred of one side for the other. I mean, it was never so telling for me, Steve, as when he spoke at La Raza during his second campaign, I think it was, his reelection campaign, and he said, and it's on video on YouTube, we want to reward our friends and punish our enemies. And he wasn't talking about foreign relations. He was talking to La Raza about Republicans, people who didn't stand with him on amnesty and with the illegal aliens on amnesty. And to say that we reward our friends and punish our enemies, to me, anyone who thinks like that is trouble enough. But when the president of the United States thinks like that, and then he encourages others to think the same way, it's no wonder we have the division that we have. It's no wonder black is against white. It's no wonder there's this delusion out there that we're slaughtering young black men, as opposed to the truth of the, for example, today, the Justice Department report that came down today that they're not going to have any civil rights charges against Officer Darren Wilson in Ferguson, because it turns out the facts were not, you know, what was that expression? What was that expression, Steve? They left that shooting with that everybody, or the football players.
Oh, the hands up. Oh, don't shoot.
Yeah,
the hands up.
Shoot. Hands up, don't shoot. It turned out to be a lie. The FBI report says that never happened. That he never put his hands up and as to not to shoot. That he was always aggressively charging the officer, and he refused to stop on command. It's now even acknowledged by the Justice Department. And so this division in our country, rich and poor, black and white, left and right, Israel, United States, Muslims and Americans, this is an agenda that we've been fed, spoon-fed for 8 years. Well, is it eight? What is it now, 6 years?
Almost eight, seven years, yeah.
7 years by this president. The damage he has done just startles me. And I, like many other people, I know you too, Steve. I mean, I breathe in and out every day waiting for him to be gone and hoping that we have the good sense and at least the decent chance to choose from from two who can begin to, if not undo what he's done, set the United States on a new course of action. Steve, I'm sorry. There's a minute and a half left. Do you want to say anything?
No, I'm good.
Okay, so I really did want to do a little more on Russia. There was an assassination a few days ago that's really important, really key, and maybe we'll just kick off with it on Monday night, Steve, because it's a very twisted web that Putin is weaving within his own country, and it has global ramifications, needless to say. So maybe we'll do that in some detail on Monday. Steve and I will be back here at Above the Fray on Monday at, I think we're going to shoot for 4:30, aren't we, Steve?
Correct.
Yeah, the show will now be on live at 4:30. You'll always be able to listen to it archived. Thanks for listening. Please spread the word. I'm Carol Gold.
I'm Steve Clark.
And you've been listening to Above the Fray. Have a great weekend, everybody. Keep warm wherever you are. Seems like if it's north or south, it doesn't really matter. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark. From politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/AboveTheFray Podcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.